This episode of Auto Dealer Live is brought to you by Auto Dealer University. Right, here we are, man. It's Thursday. We thought we'd try something a little different. Going live on a personal page.
Yeah.
We'd like to shake things up a little bit. It's Auto Dealer Live. I'm here with Chris Pritchard.
What's up?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Fantastic.
Waiting for Dave Cribbs to come in. He's on a TO. He'll be joining us here in just a minute. And man, I'll tell you what, it's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas. Yeah. And excited about ending out the year. And let's talk about that a little bit, man. You know, it comes to the year end, you know, you watch dealerships, you know, they do one of two things. You have somebody either shrink back and they start looking to next year, and then you have others that say, you know what, man, I want to pull all the stops out and I have to finish strong. So you have, on one hand, a lot of times when it comes to marketing dollars specifically, you know, dealers begin to pull back. They begin to say, okay, hold on, you know, listen, we're moving into a new year, so I want to go ahead and just pull back my money, I want to pull back my dollars. We're not doing anything. You hear this? We're not doing anything.
We don't want to compete with Santa Claus.
Yeah, we don't want to compete with Santa Claus. So what kind of thinking is that, right? I mean, and on the other hand, you have someone that says, hey, I want to throw all the money at it. I want to go after it, man. We got to close strong. We need to do whatever it takes to make December a month to remember. So which one's the right way? Which one's the wrong way? And I think it's really just two different philosophies. I'm not sure there's really a right or wrong to it, but let's weigh in a little bit and find out your thoughts. And if you're watching today, we want to welcome you to Auto Dealer Live. And we're getting ready to wind up our year as well. I'm excited, man, about the 2020 lineup and what we're doing and some of the changes and things that are happening and coming to Auto Dealer Live. But, you know, listen, some things that are highlights of next year, too, just to kind of throw something out there, Chris. We'll be broadcasting live from Digital Dealer in Orlando in April, and we're going to be having a whole rig set up. If you guys saw us last year, we're going to have scaffolding up, and we're going to be doing a live podcast. I'm also going to be moderating all the keynotes there at Digital Dealer as well. We just signed up the contract on that, and also going to be doing a couple of workshops. We're going to be full effect in Orlando, Digital Dealer, Auto Dealer Live will be there, and of course, Hustle and Grind. I'm going to be one of the keynotes there, Hustle and Grind in Orlando as well. Looking forward to being with Glenn Lundy there. But some real exciting things coming for 2020 Auto Dealer Live. But when it comes to that mindset, man, you know, what's your thoughts on that? You've been doing this a while, both on the vendor side and, of course, for years on the dealer side. And, you know, what do you think the mentality is either way, one way or the other?
Well, you know, let me explain what my mentality is when it comes to that. You know, I kind of view it as same thing as if we go into like a recession, when everyone else starts tightening up, mm-hmm. I think that means that there's tremendous opportunity in the marketplace, no matter what market you're in. If everybody in your market is tightening up, it's time for you to expand in all steam ahead. Just because there's opportunities there to take market share from your competitors. If they're scared, that's when you jump in. When everybody's jumping in, then maybe you should hold back. I don't know. But my philosophy is when everyone else is you know,
shrinking back,
I'm going to expand. That's my time to start taking market share.
Yeah, that's a philosophy, you know, that I share as well, because, you know,
a lot of times, listen, this is a competitive industry we're in, and, you know, you need every ounce of advantage, and sometimes you need the unfair advantage. And I think that if I'm looking and I'm analyzing what the word unfair means, you know, sometimes people, you know, when you're playing a game as a kid, you say, well, that wasn't fair. You know, you are accusing or you're speaking of cheating, which is obviously wrong. But unfair doesn't mean cheating. It doesn't mean that you're doing something illegal or immoral, right? It's really the unfair advantage by having, you know, being able to capitalize on a market and a space where, you know, there's more room, especially in a competitive market, especially, you know, when, for instance, in the stock market, you know, when the stock market crashes or falls, a lot of people get out or lose. A lot of people make more money in that time frame than ever before because, you know, they go in and buy low and they hold on to it. And, you know, they're not looking at today's money. They're looking at tomorrow's money. And so, you know,
speaking of that, you know, after 9/11, I made one of the biggest mistakes ever in my life. Mm-hmm. I remember American Airlines stock plummeted to nearly nothing.
Right.
And I debated on taking a huge risk and taking everything in my 401k and dumping it into the stock because I just felt like it was all eventually going to come back.
Right.
And something in me, I ended up talking myself out of it. I wish I would have done it.
Right.
Because
it was probably fear. I mean, you know, the because here's the reality. It's easy, you know, looking at, you're looking at, you know, the world and looking at salmon, for instance. You know, salmon, one of the
salmon is a popular fish, and obviously it's a, I don't like it, but it's a fish that a lot of people like, and you know, it's not served necessarily, you know, it's not just some common, you know, everyday type of, you know, fish. You're going to go out and throw a cast net out, catch some mullet or trout, what have you. Right. And one of the things that salmon does is swim upstream. It goes against the grain. And if you look at it, you know, a lot of times to progress, while everyone else is swimming downstream, it's really easy to swim downstream, to go with the momentum. But it's difficult, and a lot of times, you know, a real game changer, they're the ones that are swimming upstream when everyone else is going to the left. Unless it's towards a dead end, so to speak, but they're looking at, you know, how can I invest in this? And so, you know, let's look at that in the auto business. You know, we're talking about December. We're talking about, should I shrink back? Should I go? What's the mentality? And another thing I want to throw out is, you know, I've been doing a lot of training, you know, because I really begin to, and everyone's been tagging, you know, and by the way, if you felt like or said or whoever, if you've seen somebody say something about the 2020 vision and act like it's their own, let me tell you something. Everyone and their mama is talking about 2020 vision, and hey, it just is what it is. It doesn't belong to anybody. It belongs to everybody. But here's the reality. We started talking about 2020 vision because as a company that prides itself on vision here with Auto Dealer University and IPD Agency and everything that we do, you know, we begin to look at the next year, not day one, and certainly not just a few days before, but we begin months in advance. And I looking at for 2020 and looking at January and February, what I plan to accomplish in these, and Dave Krippich just joined us, looking at what I plan to accomplish, Dave, in these time frames, I've often said, especially recently, that today is a seed, or a down payment. Look at it however you want. It's a seed into the harvest of tomorrow, which that's the law of sowing and reaping. Let's look at it outside of that. Let's look at it as an investment and a return. Today is an investment on tomorrow's return. If you want a return on 2020, the worst thing you could do is wait until January to try to figure out what you're going to do. So, you know, there's a quote that says, if you don't start today, you won't start tomorrow. So my philosophy is, look, if you're not doing it in December, you can blame it on Santa if you want, but if you're relying on a fat man in a red suit, and that's going to hold you back, then I'm pretty sure that you're not prepared for 2020. Come on.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we have to pay attention to what's in front of us, obviously, right? Especially in the auto business, people walking in our retail locations and dealing with what's right in front of us. But you've got to be looking at not just what's happening now, but what's coming, right? And I don't know, but I would say that there probably are very few salespeople out there, especially in the auto industry, that aren't already thinking about 2020 and how that's going to look better for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
you know, we're just jumping in here. We'd love to hear your comments. Those of you that are watching here today, again, get ready for Christmas. But we're just, you know, we're just looking at what we're experiencing here, talking to dealerships, and you know, we have a finger on the pulse, and you know, a lot of you are obviously on the blacktop, and you know what's going on. And we'd love to hear from you, but we're talking to hundreds, and that's no exaggeration, hundreds of dealers every single week in this organization, whether they're clients of ours that are spending thousands and thousands of dollars with us, or potential clients, or those that we would prospect as clients. And so we hear every imaginable story, and from coast to coast, every state, including Alaska and Hawaii, every state. We're no respecter of states. We're talking to dealerships, every OEM, every make, you know, every highline, domestic, import, what have you. And we're hearing, as you can imagine, Dave, anything and everything. So you're hearing some say, I'm shrinking back, I'm not doing anything until next year. And a lot of times, you know, it's that's a sign sometimes of giving up. And I've not had the year I want, and I'm just not in the mood right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's more of a sign of confidence, honestly. I mean, you know, I think when we shrink back, it's a sign of fear, obviously. It's a sign of, you know, hey, I don't want to take as much risk right now, right? Or I have this thing to be concerned about, or that thing to be concerned about. But oftentimes, gosh, I mean, we've seen it a million times, no matter what the situation is, there's some area where we can capitalize, right? Where we actually have opportunity. When the economy was tanking and the cash for clunkers. That's just an old example. But the point is, there's an opportunity in virtually everything that we look at, you know? Speaking of opportunity, I know that, and I don't want to segue too far away, but last week I know that we talked about, you know, some of the business model, the way it's evolving and changing in the showrooms, and we'll probably be talking about that for a long time because we've been overripe and now things are beginning to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So I read in Automotive News, I printed this out, Dave, Cadillac pilots digital shopping and showroom service. And here's what's interesting about that. We all know that OEMs want the shopping and the buying and the sales experience to look the way they want it to look.
Right.
Their problem is that they've turned rights over to individual owners that own these franchises when it comes to making decisions on how they do business as well. Well, Cadillac has an interesting way of dealing with that, kind of moving into the future, which, by the way, I really like this. Not that Cadillac would either do it or not do it because Dave Cribbs likes it, but it is pretty cool. So essentially what they've done, and this article talks about it, and they piloted it in one store in March. Now they've moved into, I believe, five or six states. 160 dealers, Cadillac dealers, opted in, and it started on Monday. But they have an online experience where Cadillac provides a product specialist, and they're live. Just like we do live sales trainings where we drop into dealerships, the customer can go online and there's a virtual rep there actually in a showroom with cars and walking through the cars, doing the like a product specialist,
yeah.
And then they connect to the dealer with appointments. So it's from the factory.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, as far as commerce goes, you know, I mean, let's look at e-commerce in general. Commerce, I mean, that's how we sell our product. I mean, we sell, you know, both two or three different types of products.
Sure.
To dealerships all over the nation, and we don't see them. I mean, there's clients that we've worked with for years that we've never met.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things I'll throw, just being, you know, again, I haven't read the article, but looking at that, you know, dealers are watching right now, devil's advocate. Hey, I'm not going to follow Cadillac on anything. Maybe the average, last I checked, the average Cadillac dealer sells about 9 Cadillacs a month across the nation. That's the average. So here's the thing. No fault, and I'm not faulting them. So my question would be, do they have anything to lose, right? So is that innovation, or is that saying, hey man, we're grasping at straws? And listen, we're not a bias.
Yeah.
We're not a biased show. We're going to shoot it straight. And my question is that.
I think it's both. Cadillac. Cadillac doesn't have as much necessarily to risk. And this is a conservative approach, quite frankly, so I don't think they're going to offend their customers by any means. But what it does do is it allows the customer to go further into the process before they arrive at the store. So that's, I think that dealers like that aspect of it, that more is getting done ahead of time. So when they do see that customer walk in the store, or when that, by the way, the appointment's set by Cadillac, so when they get that lead coming in, they've already gone through a virtual tour of the cars. To me, that's leveling up the lead. That's a, you know, a lower hanging fruit, if you will.
So is this a live person that's actually?
It's a live person that can hear the customer, and the person doing the demonstration cannot see them, but they can hear them. So in this example, and you can actually find this on Cadillac's site, but in the and on YouTube, but the video, it's kind of interesting because you can hear the caller, which is the customer, you can hear the caller talking to the rep. And it's kind of interesting because the caller says, can you hang on just a minute? I'm just going to switch workout machines. So she's at the gym. It's a female caller. She's at the gym getting walked through
this
Cadillac version.
Well, hey, think of this for a second, because that's obviously where it's going. I mean, we're in a world where, you know, I mean, I think it's almost interesting when you look at the auto business, and we've been talking for years, you know, on the internet side of things, we've been talking about, hey, are we going to move to an online experience? Mm-hmm. And I think what's happened, of course, the dealership world through the Carvana and things like that, you know, is shifting. And we just read last week or week before, we were talking about Asbury and how they're moving to this, you know, one of the major changes they're making. And Chris just read before he came in here where they're buying a park place
automotive for $1 billion.
Yeah, $1 billion. I saw that too.
Yeah, so they're also expanding. But here's the thing. It's almost in an interesting way. The auto industry could pass up the what we've been talking about for e-commerce and could move into more of a video e-commerce aspect of it, because video is absolutely where it's at. And,
yeah.
But I want to throw another wrench out there, because here we are, a training company. We talk about this, and here's the deal, man. We do talk about training a lot, because I posed a question yesterday. I put it on LinkedIn, put it on Facebook. We put it all over the place, and we had a lot of comments, a lot on LinkedIn. And it was just this. Look, you have $14,000. You know, for your business. You know, I was talking to a lot of dealers as well. Would you spend it on training, or would you spend it on marketing? And I had all kinds, in the automotive was about 90% comments from automotive of responses. Most said training, and even marketing company owners, which were probably 4, 5, 6 comments, were owners of marketing companies said, I'd spend it on training, because marketing without training doesn't work. So it goes down to how much more important would training be now? Now you just added an element of video. I mean, like, you got to be on your A game even more so, because now you just added a visual element, which could be a major turn off, a major benefit, or a major detriment to the sale, one way or the other. I mean, so, but think about that for a second. It should be where we're going. I mean, we do Zoom meetings here. We do go-to meetings, things like that, where you get on the phone because the disadvantage has always been over the phone or online has been, there's not 5 senses. You're now down to 1. You can hear them. And there's some senses that kind of come out that present themselves that aren't part of the major 5 that are more like, you know, perceived body language, you know, and I you can kind of tell a person, and you learn those things when dealing over the phone.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you add video, you're adding back in body language, and it's like being in person. So now training is even more important.
Yeah, I think so too. And I really believe that they're onto something here, because if I'm a consumer and if I'm at home, right, and I know I can go get this virtual, we've seen virtual test drives. We're just watching someone test drive a car or watching a thing. But when you're talking about actually live interaction, like a customer can say, oh, well, can you pull that seat down? Can you show me that piece right there? And what that does is it allows the consumer to go to a safe place where they know they're not going to be asked to buy something, right? Of course, they're going to pitch the appointment at the end. If they like what they see, they offer to make the appointment at the dealer. But for me, that's a win-win. That's something as a dealer I could deal with from the factory involvement. And it does kind of make sense, I think. And I think the factories will be all over this, just because it gives them a little bit more control of the consumer experience, which is what they're concerned about.
I love it. I think this is very innovative. And I also think that this is something that local dealers could do without having the franchise involved. I don't think that this is like, from a logistical standpoint, it's not really that hard.
I think the OEM, the brand, the OEM, say Cadillac, Toyota, whatever, they're gonna be able, in my opinion, to drive traffic in a much broader way.
Absolutely. But
to those type of product engagement things.
But I also think that if you're in the local market and you're spending tons of money driving traffic to your website, this is a very nice thing to be able to convert that customer to, when they hit your website, able to actually communicate with someone, look at the cars. You know, think about I'm going to venture to bet that when they implement this, that you're going to see appointment shows go up. I just can't see how it doesn't.
Hey, I want to say, let's give a shout out real quick to Jane Lee Kalinsinski. She
hey,
said,
Jane.
Hey, guys, what's up, Jane? And we have Kevin Stronsnyder. He is the
Kevin Stronsnyder.
Thank you. Kevin Stronsnyder. He's the principal at Stronsnyder Chevrolet. What's up, Kevin? He just said, hey to us. And Tony posed a question. Tony Washington, Tito here, said, having the control to ask questions and get answers is what the consumer is desiring. Having control to ask questions and get answers is what the consumer is desiring.
Yep.
What do you think?
Absolutely. I think
I think they're desiring that, but I think it's also a comfort thing too, where they know they're not going to be pressured into in a situation where they're going to feel uncomfortable.
Well, yeah. In fact, in this what the factory has set up has nothing to do with pricing. It's mm-hmm. simply showing the product, and so again, it goes back to that safe place. I think it's great because I feel like if someone makes an appointment based on this interaction, they are so much further along in the process when they come in. To me, it's a win-win.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, so you know, let me ask you guys this, man. Coming in,
it's not a replacement, though. By the way, it's not a replacement for replacing those who are on staff that show product and do things. But this is just an additional.
Yeah, it's addition. Okay. It is, and I think that it could be a strong addition to an internet department.
Absolutely.
You know that. I think it's the way that it should be. I think it should be mandatory. I mean, you know, we kind of go down a rabbit trail of the training, but it does take a lot of effort and, you know, to put, you know, to impart training, the right type of training into personnel. And that's going to require a lot of training, because the moment a dealer exposes a consumer to this avenue and someone uses it, then what you're doing is you're exposing them. We think sometimes the technology or the opportunity, but the reality is we can squander an opportunity. I mean, just think about it. If you had a horrible salesperson over the phone or in person, and you know, let's just say you had a sloppy, wrinkled up, you know, bad breath salesperson, right? That didn't learn the product, that was blatantly, selfish or self-centered, what have you, didn't listen, and you put that person on the floor, and then you open that person up to take care of customers. I mean, you could look at it and go, hey, we got another person to take ups. True, but do you want that person taking up? So the very moment you do this, a dealer's opening up an opportunity, but they're also opening up, you know, challenges where it requires training. So I can see a dealer going, you know, shelfing it and going, let me just wait and get on the back side of this thing and see how it works. Or I can see someone going, you know something, I'm going to do what it takes to really teach my people so I can be innovative. And I think that I applaud Cadillac for doing it. I'm anxious to see how they roll it out, because, you know, the OEM rolled out BDCs and really pushed on the BDC aspect even 3-4 years ago, they did it, but dealers were apprehensive and everyone did it their own way and some didn't do it at all, you know? And so I'm curious to see how the dealer gets on board.
Yeah, I would encourage any dealers that may have, any Cadillac dealers that opted in. These are the following states. We've got this launching in March. Dealers in Texas, California, Illinois, New Jersey, and New York can opt into the program. 160 opted in right away. And when they say opt in, I'm guessing that doesn't come free. I mean, there's resources that go into this from Cadillac, and if they're sending them leads that have already gone to a certain point and they're making the appointment for them at the store, I'm sure part of that opt in is a cost. But I would love to hear from any of those dealers now or in the near future as they start to roll this out, as to what their thoughts are.
Yeah. Tony again made another comment, and he's commenting all over this. He said, well, a couple of things. I think the first one is necessary as well to read, or the second comment where he talked about the average customer's 30 minutes away, and he said you're giving them back time, and time is money.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said, not everyone will want this experience. For those that would be open to the idea of getting into a Zoom or FaceTime, they tend to appreciate it more, and they're happier with higher gross. That's another thing I like about it. You know, Tony just made a point where, you know, time's money, and it takes the customer's attention off of possibly what they're maybe a custom or gotten used to, and that might lower the growth. So this might again put them, not that you're trying to put them at a disadvantage, but it gives them back the time, but it also puts the dealership in familiar territory, the customer in a visitor's playing field, so to speak, again, which opens up through great customer service and, hey, we're offering this wonderful new tool, you know, there's the potential for possibly to make some more money on that. I know you like that, Cribs.
Yeah, likey. you know, what's interesting is it also makes me think of, though, this is obviously when the OEM's involved and we're talking about opting in with partner dealers, then this is a market-based type of product. In other words, they're going to send the customer who's in that PMA, right? But where that made me go was I also saw something today on CBT News. There was an interview with a CEO of a company that helps facilitate these online processes where state lines are crossed. They have delivery services set up so people can buy kind of like a Carvana, but they're buying from an individual franchise store. But the point to that is the numbers are growing, Dave and Chris, where consumers are purchasing from a store that they're choosing versus a store down the street. And that could be a state away, two states away. We've seen individual salespeople that have amazing marketing where people fly in, drive home, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. The point to that is, and we see, you know, stores like Dan Cummins, who's in a town of 9,600 selling, you know, 2,000 or 1,000 cars a month, just unheard of. But what that means is they're pulling a lot outside their market through different marketing efforts. And I don't know why I went there, but I think it's because I would love to see dealers that that look a little broader other than just their own backyard, because there's so much opportunity out there. If a small store in a small town can go from 200 to 1,000 cars, you know, going outside of their PMA in aggressive ways, I mean, that just shows us there's huge opportunity.
I agree. Well, so, say yeah. You, Chris.
That can you're go just sitting down, here listening to it. A long road, but
I mean, you're just sitting here listening to us a little bit. You're nodding your head.
I'm exorbitant. I mean, I love this whole entire concept. I'm sitting here thinking of like different ways you could implement it. I'm one of those types of people that whenever something new comes out, I'd rather run to it than be last. Does that make sense? Yeah. I'm not the one that says, oh, let's wait and see how everybody else does it. I'd rather run to it now.
Is that why you've been losing all that money on the stock
market? It is, unfortunately. Yeah. I need to borrow some, by the way.
I'm just kidding.
No, but, you know, because usually what ends up happening is if you wait that two-year gap, everybody starts doing it, and then you lost all that opportunity. So it's a risk. But I love this in the aspect that I just think it comes down to what everything is about in marketing, and that is personalization and connection and being able to connect with someone, answer their questions, show them the vehicle. I just think
most of all solution. It really provides a solution for the customer who may, you know, no one wakes up and goes, man, I just can't wait to go meet a car salesman, right?
It totally just takes happen. That out of the equation.
Yeah. So that would be the attraction. So
yeah.
And plus, this gets you one step further to being able to do everything online. I mean, because once you do this, then it's just...
Yeah, we're moving there. And you can bet if Cadillac has success with it, I mean, they're obviously a GM company. You'll see it, and the next thing will be Chevy and GMC and everything else.
I got a question on marketing, man. I was, you know, wondering, I know the answer ultimately is no, but will this be a year where we see more traditional marketing? Will we see it continue, you know, the latter part of this year? We watched a resurgence in some traditional marketing, certain traditional marketing, you know, call it vintage, call it throwback, what have you. Mm-hmm. But there's a resurgence in some traditional marketing. And the thought was that, you know, things like direct mail, things like, you know, never really died. But there, but you know, there's been this resurgence even on responses. And, you know, and I want to maybe just put, you know, ask you, Chris, as a marketer here too, you know, keeping your finger on the pulse of this, what is the... Where do you see it coming in 2020? Because I mean, there's, you know, and here's another thing. Like, you know, we've been doing a lot of these Facebook events, you know, and I'm talking, you know, for dealers and so forth and in mail. And I've never seen, really, to be honest with you, and I've got, you know, those of you know, we do the show and we talk to a lot of digital marketers. We're involved in a lot of digital marketing. We work with a lot of dealerships. And, but I'm a big believer because the dealer is a big believer in ROI, looking at ROI. Because I've never met a dealer that's okay with spending money that doesn't want to know how many cars did I sell. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a really, I want to know how does it work? You know, because that's the question. Hey, you know what? That's the question. You had a lot of clicks. Well, how many cars did I sell? You know? And so I've seen two ROIs that have blown my mind in 2019, and one of them is the resurgence of direct mail. Certain types of direct mail going to very targeted, you know, credit customers. You know, the credit market has been very good for direct mail. And then on the flip side, these Facebook events hitting customers via Facebook with strong offers. You know, I'm talking like offers that you would have seen in, you know, mail pieces and different types of messaging like that. I've watched ROI soar through the roof. And I'm a huge believer in that because I can draw it to the end to, hey, these customers are responding on this particular offer, Mr. Dealer, and these are the vehicles you sold off of it. And then he can then in turn go, hey, this is the gross I made and this is the money I made. And hey, I'm going to reinvest it again. What's your thoughts on that? Or do you have, what's your thoughts on moving forward in 2020? Do you see that changing? Do you see that increasing?
I see it increasing. Mm-hmm. I think that there is some things that are going to be coming down the road. I see a lot more traditional coming, a lot more money going and being paid towards more traditional advertising and people kind of pulling their money from search and other things of that nature, mm-hmm. Because the return on their investment is just not there, and it's a very crowded space to begin with. I think the other thing that's going to draw people there is, unfortunately, is the government, mm-hmm. because they continue to crack down on data, and it's becoming a much bigger and bigger an issue. Just like California just passed a new law that's going to give some headaches for marketers, especially. And if you're a data company, it's a big headache. So I see a lot more money being spent in the next few years towards traditional. So I can see an increase, whether it's direct mail, television, radio.
I disagree.
Okay, of course you do.
Well, I disagree. Of course you do. No, I mean, I disagree on the traditional. I think direct mail has a very good opportunity because it's one of the traditional pieces that it's going to arrive in someone's hand, right? It's going to show up at their door. However, I think that the spend is definitely going to be gravitate heavily towards a more modern instead of traditional spend. And I think part of that is because
what do you mean by modern?
When we talk about Facebook campaigns, for example, because we can now essentially herd people, right? We can herd them in our direction if we're good enough. If we put together the right campaign and we get it in front of the right people, like you can herd them digitally and be able to see that measurably. Some of the other campaigns, like traditional, like whether it be radio, newspaper, even mail to some degree, but some of the traditional campaigns, some of the issue with tracking is that, you know, you could have gotten four people in that came in by radio, but you don't really know that because the interview process didn't really bring that out or things like that. It's not something they talk about or bring up.
So outside of Facebook, where do you think the money's going to
be spent? Well, let me comment on that I was going to ask that question, or I was thinking the same thing you were.
Because I agree that people should be spending more money in Facebook. And well, here's my point. A marketer, mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, from a digital aspect, I wouldn't spend money any other way digitally except for Facebook.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And here's why. And let me throw this out there. You know, I think, and tell me if this doesn't make sense to you, okay? And this is going to be kind of like, just hear it for a second and let it land. Where Google, and I Google things, we Google, mm-hmm. but it's like things come to you more sometimes than you go to them. Mm-hmm. If you're in the right space, if you're online, you're online. And a lot of times people are on Facebook. So with the right type of targeting and the right type of message, the ad can come to you and you click on it. It's not the Google that people like. It's the clickability possibly. So I think that the ability for Facebook to bring that message, and I know Google does, but I think that might be why it's effective. You understand what I'm saying? I mm-hmm. see that maybe even shifting some of the dollars or some of the response and some of the results, which ultimately should shift the dollars. And I totally agree with you, man, because at the same time, I'm not really sure. I think that almost like some of the SEO and some of that out there is kind of like yesterday's radio or TV. It's more image awareness. Mm-hmm. So if I see it enough, you know, one day, once upon a time when I'm interested in buying a car, I might think of that particular, it might come to my mind. But think about this. If you're watching television, you're watching the Super Bowl, or you're watching, you know, because everyone watches commercials in the Super Bowl. Let's just say you're watching a football game or whatever you watch live. We DVR, we record, what have you, you know, commercials or fast forward through them a lot, or we watch on demand, you know, or streaming services today. So obviously there's not the commercials, but if we do watch a commercial, does it ever make you, when you're watching it, stop what you're doing, right? Pause the TV or get up and then get in the car and drive down to McDonald's and buy a Big Mac. You know,
nope.
It doesn't make you,
but
do
you know what it does do? It makes me pick up your phone.
Mike's shaking his head. Yes.
And go to the website.
Maybe.
Absolutely, it
maybe
does.
It does, or maybe it does this. Maybe the next time, maybe
makes
2 weeks.
Makes me go to Uber Eats.
Maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, maybe whatever. When you're in the mood for, you're driving down the road and you're hungry and you see a McDonald's, you might think of, hey, I remember that commercial. They have two
no
Big Macs.
No doubt.
However, you eat every day, 3 times a day at least. You buy a car once every 3 years to 5 years.
Sure.
So that's an image awareness. It's not a shot in the arm. I need leads in and ups in right now. I'm having a bad month.
Right, right.
And I misspoke. The other thing I would invest my money in is OTT, I believe.
You down with OTT?
OTT.
You know me.
Also, when I said modern, I consider Pandora modern versus radio, for example. The streaming music, streaming channels, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Versus TV. But anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Pandora.
Pandora.
Spotify came in. Pandora's like, bye bye.
I would like to see the ROI.
I'm probably old news.
I would like to see ROI of people spending money, a ton of money in Pandora.
And all this,
we have some local dealers.
Hey, all this pre-roll too, money. Man. I'm not sure.
I don't know what their ROI is.
If you're doing this pre-roll, what's your thoughts on pre-roll? And I'm going to offend some folks. I hope
pre-roll.
Pre-roll, like when you go on YouTube or something like that and you click on a video and you're forced to watch that video
that
comes up before. Oh. Let me tell you something. I
thought it had something to do with toilet paper when you said pre-roll.
Me personally, I would personally not spend my money with that company because they made me mad and maybe had to watch a video before. I mean, I purposely complain every time that happens.
Well, you know what?
It's like, stupid.
I know. You know, I hate pre-roll from a consumer standpoint, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, mm-hmm. Also a consumer, I realize that sometimes when the thing that irritates me is when pre-roll pops up and it's something that I have no interest in and never will have interest in. Mm-hmm. That annoys me. But when it's something I've previously looked at and it gives me some content that's relevant to something I already looked at and it gives me information that I might not have already known, I'm kind of into it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all about personalization.
Well, so I have to watch the pre-roll. Like I was watching a Hulu show last night, right? Mm-hmm. And they make you watch the pre-roll. Right. But here, they're so kind, though. They give you three choices of the pre-roll, which it's the same actors, mm-hmm. the same message, but it's like in a different setting. Like
they gave you three choices?
Yeah. It's like, would you prefer to see the next ad with the actors on vacation, in a shoe store, or here? It's crazy.
Oh, I dig that.
Because that's another selling point as well. So, I mean, keep in mind that's a selling point because what they're doing is they're going to
finding
the advertisers.
Finding your interest. They're finding,
they're going to the advertisers. They're saying, hey, they're clicking on this. They're saying they want to see a shoe ad. They like your shoe.
Right.
But the reality is, you know, look, so, okay, so then you guys disagree a little bit, but I think you actually agree more than you.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
I mean, based on what you said and he clarified that, I think.
I never agree with Cribs.
We're going to kiss and make up after the show.
When it comes to training, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Is new hire more important, right? Every dealer wants to focus on new hire, or is training your veterans more important?
Hang on, before you answer, I'm taking the opposite opinion, whatever he is.
Fair enough. I got that answer. That's a no-brainer.
Before you answer it, let me just set the stage here for 1 second. Because to our listeners, we talk to a lot of dealers and you have two schools of thought and you hear this. So I'm going to kind of throw this out there. You have, you know, everyone wants new hire training because they hire a lot of people. They hire a lot of people because there's a huge turnover because people aren't trained. So it's definitely needed, okay, number one. And there's a lot of money in turnover. There's a lot of money in hiring. However, at the same time, we hear a lot dealers, well, my new guys are all over the training, but my veterans don't really want to watch it. Okay. So my thinking is your veterans need it. Don't think they do, but they've got a ton of bad habits and they've lost every good habit. So my question is, but they're both needed and there's a case for both. And I think that's probably why you sell training, because you can sell both. Which one's more important, Dave?
Ooh, it's a no-brainer. A new hire is far more important. And here's why. A new hire wants to be trained. A new hire expects to be trained. A new hire will be trained. If you have, I'm assuming the dealer, I'm going to give the dealer credit that they're going to implement some type of new hire training. Mm-hmm. The problem is, and I get your point about the rest of it, but the problem is after the new hire training, it doesn't become a training issue with veterans. It becomes a leadership issue. Because, you know, veterans fall into a trap of, okay, well, I've gotten my training, I'm done, I'm good, I've sold enough cars now, I kind of know what's going on, I'm good to go, I'm floating out there, you know, I'm doing fine. And they think that you know, I've seen it all, done it all, especially if it's a few years in. But I think that's a dangerous, naive approach, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to training, you know, it's the leadership is what's needed after new hire training with okay. a team, in my
so
opinion.
Should new
so
hire-
I don't know if that's a fair way, but here's what else I would say real quick to my point before we go into this debate. I'll share these other two points, is that, you know, we talked about how everyone says they have new hire training. Unfortunately, they don't always, you know, or they have some very small portion of what we would call new hire training. So the point to that is we lose a lot because people get started wrong. Mm-hmm. People don't start off in a good place. They're not given a enough to get started and have a chance to make it.
So Chris,
but go ahead.
Well, let me ask you this. Should new hire training, then when you train up new hires, right, and you get them up and going, and they're hungry, they're go-getters. I agree with mm-hmm. Cribs that a new hire, right, the right person's, assuming you hired correctly, person's hungry, person's ready, they're unencumbered by the facts. I mean, they're ready to apply everything. If you,
they
you
know, follow blindly because they have to.
Follow blindly. So if they're like a baby bird with their mouth open and you fill it, right, boom, they catch on, they do it. So should properly trained new hires replace sacred cows? Should you hire and train the new hires and then fire those eventually once you hire them up? Should you replace those that are unwilling to learn, that are stuck in their ways?
I just want to say everything that Cripp said. I do. All everything right, Cripp said, though, is crap, and I totally disagree with it. No, I'm just kidding. Totally.
But do you have an answer for that?
No. You know, I'm not – I don't believe in sacred cows anyway. Like, most of the time they
– Well, they exist.
They do exist. And it depends on what kind of sacred cow we're talking about. We're talking about the guy that sits in the corner and doesn't take an up because he's
no. We're talking about the guy who doesn't buy into the training. The one that, you know that you look
then
at someone.
They have to
imagine
go.
Looking at someone on your team that okay. you know and then saying, "Hey,
the answer is absolutely yes. You shoot the cow, you club him over the head like a baby seal. That's what you do. I'm serious.
I agree with that, but I want to say
well,
this.
Yeah, I thought you were wasn't on the answer.
No, my wasn't on the answer.
You sound like it. You weren't sure of yourself.
I just want to clarify. I don't want to push a 20 car a month guy out the door. Wait a minute.
20 car guy that won't train.
Wait a minute. That sits in the corner and doesn't take a single up. He just has repeat business.
Okay,
you know
so
what?
The 20 car
if
guy.
If he doesn't want to take training and he's selling 20, 30 cars a month and he's not taking any ups, more power to him.
So you're going to let that person. So yeah, what absolutely. Party, you're going to let that person sit in there and do 20 cars a month because what? He's moving 20 cars a month and that's
and
making
not,
money.
And he's not costing me anything because he's not taking any ups.
What position is he? So let me ask you a question. Sales. Someone comes in and goes, "Hey, so I'm joining the team. There's 10 of us. Oh, what's Joe do? Oh, Joe's in sales too. He's been here 10 years. He does 20 cars a month, but he's not part of the he's not part of your process.
He's part of the team, but
I don't know, man. I don't subscribe to that. Okay. I don't know. What do you think, Cribs?
I don't subscribe to it, but I can defend it partially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you really do truly have a 20 to 30 car a month guy who is not costing the store as far as, you know, reputation, if they're getting great CSI, whatever the case may be, there may be some merit to that with being a little bit more independent than the rest of the sales team. However, for me personally, I wouldn't have it at my store mm-hmm. only because I want that 20 to 30 car a month person to be an example to also to be able to come along the entire team and give strength to the dealership. I think that's part of the least that they can do with the dealership providing this opportunity. Let's don't forget that even though we call it being an entrepreneur, being a salesperson in the auto business, and we say it's our business within a business, it's still within a business. And
a comment came in here said, if your culture or environment is that training is part of day-to-day operations and people don't buy into that, they shouldn't be a part of that environment. They set a wrong example for anyone new coming in.
I agree. I also would say the veteran, by the way, the veteran who's successful that maybe feels like they don't need training anymore, I would also argue that most of them would not only admit but acknowledge positively that part of the reason for their success are based on things that they learned in the beginning when they were trained.
Yeah, but so this training, but here's the important thing. Now, see, now you're getting into you're getting into something that really kind of goes up my crawl a little bit.
Oh, come on. Like,
well, because here's the reality. I mean,
I'm saying is the first week you're going to learn things that give you an ROI for the rest of your career. I mean, not that it stops there.
So, okay, every top producer that I've ever met, including myself or anything like that, I mean, train on a consistent and daily basis. So if it's good enough for me, my philosophy to train, then there's, the person that comes to me and says I'm too good for training, or that doesn't say that outright, but that just lives that.
Right.
Again, you know, I don't, and maybe it sounds like I'm coming across where maybe this person has a bad attitude. I'm not even saying a bad attitude, but just the unwillingness to do that. I mean, have you arrived?
No.
Have you arrived?
My point is that person that takes that position, right? That says, you know, I've got it down, whatever the case may be. That same person, I think, would admit that training from the beginning was very foundational and very good for them.
But then you're saying that training is...
I'm discrediting their theory of training's you know, not good or not good for me
anymore.
They're
not saying training's not good for me. They're saying I no longer need to train.
No longer need it. No, I definitely don't subscribe to that.
So now we're going back to the new hire portion of it, and it stops there. But what about this? Hey, I know the road to the sale. I got the process down. Man, I know every aspect of it. I can watch it. I'm not skipping a single solitary step. However... Mm-hmm. You know what? There's different types of training. There's training on sharpening your skills. There's training because every person, you know, everything we do, whether it's a diet, it's exercise, it's, you know, religion. We hear a preacher. We come back over to the closer to where we should be. Then all of a sudden, you know, we move back off our diet. Then we get back on So training brings us back to the center of
there's no question. And someone, and maybe even, you know, like you can use the Patriots, for example, right? Because they've been
cheating.
They've been doing whatever they're doing. But the point is that the point is no matter how good you get, you're always examining some way to dig deeper, to have something, some other edge, if you will, whether that's inflating the footballs or overinflating the football, whatever.
No, they actually got caught videoing again twice.
Right. Okay. Well, videoing, you know what I'm saying? Hey, at least they realize they need an edge, right? So they're doing I'm not saying it's good, but the point is that just like, let's just bring it back to the table when car sales, okay? In car sales, you have a basic road to the sale. You follow the process. The process won't cheat you. It's gonna serve you well. But I've always said that understanding the nuances will make you rich, right? It's going deeper into every single step in every single situation and having the perfect or as close to perfect of a response or an answer or a way to move forward in any circumstance. And that's an ever-evolving, never-ending thing. So that would be why a veteran would need to be bought into training.
That's great. These are all popular answers, but and I'm going to be very unpopular
for
saying this.
I'm
going to be very unpopular for saying this. I just don't think it's reality. And what I mean by that is 90% of your dealerships do a horrible job, horrible, horrible job of new hire training. Absolutely awful. And what I mean by that is they bring someone in, they train them for a couple of days, and then boom, they're on the floor. And then that's all the training they have. Yeah. Good luck to you. Hope you make it. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, this guy sucks. I can't believe we hired him. You know, and they blame it on the new hire. That's reality. That's why you can't blow out that 20 car a month guy. He's not taking it up. Now, my personal opinion is.
Well, we're not talking, by the way, about just blowing someone out.
But
we're not talking about just going around every dealership blowing someone out. Right. We're talking about dealerships that would purchase training, that would believe in training, that would put their new hires through training, proper training. But what about, because we hear this. You hear somebody say, listen, when we have engagement, you hear people say, my new hires love it. My veterans, there's a couple of my veterans that don't need it, that don't think they need it. I don't understand that.
The ultimate question becomes, can I see my store at a higher level even without this person that's doing 20 or 30? Or are they the ones that are going to keep me at this particular level? In other words, what's the trade-off worth? Maybe I do lose a couple of units the first couple of months, but if that allows me to excel to get 50 more to replace that 20 or 30 car guy, then there's your answer.
Yeah, it comes down to leadership, what you said a little bit ago. It's a leadership issue. It's a philosophy, and you either subscribe to it or not. And it's really about growth, because you're looking at it, and if you have a fear, which I understand that as an owner, listen, and then, by the way, I've done it, and I would still probably think twice before, but I've had to do it, and I've hesitated and procrastinated on doing it in the past. And I'm not saying I wouldn't do it again, where you have to let someone go, you know, or part ways with someone who is that type of person. But I'm saying to you that, you know, you have to look at it. And the reason you would pause, the reason you would hesitate, the reason you would procrastinate, and the reason you wouldn't do it, any one of those, is simply one reason: because of the money,
right?
Because of revenue. The sales, revenue, mm-hmm. gross, you know, numbers, you know, whatever.
Absolutely.
So, but also, you're limiting yourself, and you're probably going to be capped out. Then the other reason that the reason you would actually undo that, even though it would be a season of pruning, cutting back, would be also for revenue, gross, numbers, and money.
Correct.
But it would take a little more time. So it is an investment. Nothing. It's very similar to investing in something that will have a return down the road. You know, making an investment today on something that will yield a return down the road.
Which is where this all started.
Sure.
In conversation of going into 2020 and looking mm-hmm. at that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not for everyone. You can't just, I'm not advocating going around just cutting everybody, because it would be a fool to cut somebody. First of all, if somebody's blowing someone out in 2 weeks on that type of new hire training, and they're going, then all of a sudden they hear this and they go, hey, I'm going to go cut my sacred cow. Johnny's been sitting over there like a lazy sack of crap, and then they're going to go cut Johnny.
Sitting there like a lazy sack of crap that sells 25-30 cars a month.
Then now you've got both ends of it that need work, right? So I'm looking at it from the standpoint of the constant person that's looking at it from the new hire. You have to fix, I think my answer would be ultimately, though, you have to, new hire training is more important mm-hmm. because at first, before you can cut this, you have to replace them. So what mm-hmm. I say is, you hire, you train, you build up, mm-hmm. you build a culture, and then very quickly you get everybody on board with it, and anybody that doesn't buy into that system is not buying into your leadership, and
yeah,
therefore they must go.
I agree. Mm. Mm.
Yeah. I just don't believe it. I do.
So
to
you're
going to
keep
extent,
a bunch of. Okay, how about a guy named? Let's just say the guy named Christian. Let's just say someone named Christian. You know, I mean, is disrespectful to his manager.
I would have blew him out the first day, but
yeah, see that?
But ownership wouldn't let me, because he became a sacred cow. He became right. The favorite guy of everybody.
Well, let me ask
the
you this. He just said he blew him out.
Okay,
because you know why? Because he's talking
let
about
me
someone
give
him
another
who used to work
scenario.
For him that disrespected.
Oh, okay.
Came to me and told me, I just can't work for Chris, man. I just, you know, I want to go to you and give you all my TOs. Undermining.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. But let me ask you this, Chris. Let's say you let's say you got a couple of you know, great new hires, and mm-hmm. and you pour into them, right? You do a great new hire training, you get foundation going, and you got Johnny over here that's not participating, but he's rocking out 25 cars a month, right? Let's leave Johnny alone for a minute. Now you groom, you know, Billy and Bobby Sue, whatever. You groom them, and they're heading in a right direction, and all of a sudden they're up there 15 cars, 20 cars. I mean, they're going to hit the numbers eventually that Johnny is, but Johnny's in their ear, and they're watching Johnny. They're watching Johnny over there. Johnny doesn't have to train. Why should I have to train anymore? I just did 18 cars this month. What do yeah. I need to train for?
Then
now
Johnny's
having an effect. He may not be saying anything to him. He's just
okay.
He's
well,
just
if he's
out
not saying
train.
Anything to him, I mean.
He's just out on the training, but
Johnny's
he's still
there.
Putting I'm still observing Johnny as a coworker.
If Johnny's part of the coffee club, Johnny will be gone. I mean,
okay. Let's just fire everybody.
You know what? Let's just do everything virtually through
let's
the
clean,
OEM.
Let's clean
and,
everybody
and,
out.
Yeah, I know that we're on a show. We've been just talking, I don't even know who's listening now, but
Mom.
You know, because we're kind of going onto a tangent. But I got to role play here with you for a second, okay? Hey, boss, how you doing?
Good, man.
Hey,
what's
I know
up?
You want me to do that training and everything like that, but I mean, I sold. You know, 15 deals last month, and mm-hmm. I'm doing pretty good. So I think I'm not going to train this morning.
Okay.
Or this
good.
Week at all, really.
I'm sorry, how long have you been here?
I've been here 2 years, but I've been selling 15,
yeah.
20
when
deals
When you get to 10
month.
And you're selling 20 or 30, then you can have that conversation with me. Until then, go train.
Yeah, but I've been doing 20 a month.
I don't care. Go train.
He just went. You just went against. Mm. He just made our case.
Yeah, he did.
That wasn't his answer, though, was
there
it?
There you go.
Look, never come to court with me.
Yeah. Chris answers
on
one
side.
Way, and then when he opens his mouth, he said the opposite. Okay, Chris, well, I agree with you now.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
All right. Are we there? Are
We're
we,
there, man.
Are we there? Awesome.
Is yeah. it time to land the plane?
It's time to land the plane.
Land the plane. Oh, I think some people are thankful we're landing it.
I think people are sending me hate mail as we speak.
I just, no, because you redeemed yourself at the end.
Yeah. I hate that guy. He's such a jerk.
Jeez, man. You know, you used to
there has to
pants.
Be a bad guy.
Well, I was
going to
say,
we need
a bad guy. What do they call him, a heel?
You guys can be the popular guys.
Well, remember
I'll be
used
the...
to, we need a heel, man.
Hey, remember when Chris used to drop his pants? Like whenever a dealer would like ask for a discount, Chris would just drop like you know the price. Like
fake news.
Couldn't close the screen door.
No. If there's anyone guilty of dropping pants, It would be you.
Hey, I thought you meant literally.
He couldn't. He couldn't close a screen door.
You know? Wow.
I'm just kidding.
Are you going to listen to that?
You remember that, Chris? You remember that?
You know, it's fake news.
Fake news.
And whatever.
Fake news.
It's fake news.
We deal with like, hey, listen. So he's like, Mr. Smith, you know, he got on the phone. He's like, hey, this is Chris. I'm the manager here. And so that Jerry says you like the program. Yeah, it's a little too expensive. You know, I'll give you 50% off. How about that?
Yeah. Hey,
that is definitely fake news.
We were thinking about coming in tonight, Chris. Well, usually the weekends are a better time if you'd rather come in on the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just messing with
you. Never happened.
I jumped on the bandwagon.
Never happened. That's okay. Whatever. Right. The truth is out there, and that is not the truth.
Mike Phillips said, I'm calling Chris for my next quote. That's a good
call
move.
Me.
Good
call
move,
me.
Mike. You might get it for, he might pay you.
Yes, please call me.
All right, guys. Hey, thank you very much.
My number is 911.
Hey, we're going to a quick break. We're going to end with our commercial break here, man. Hey, we hope you guys have a wonderful week. We'll see you guys next week. And have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
See ya.
See ya. Boop.
This is Tom. Tom is shopping for a pre-owned vehicle. Tom wants to make a smart decision on his vehicle purchase. So he's made sure to review the vehicle's history report and compare prices with similar vehicles. He knows purchasing the wrong vehicle can be an expensive mistake. But what Tom doesn't know is that there is a lot more to a pre-owned vehicle than just the history report and price. The process of vehicle reconditioning, preparation, and research is different at every dealer. And the quality of that reconditioning has a major impact on a vehicle's safety and value. Tom should be shopping at dealers who use Auto iPacket, a digital document folder that has everything he needs to know about a pre-owned vehicle all in one place. Every complete Auto iPacket includes a vehicle history report, mechanical inspections, reconditioning receipts, manufacturer equipment breakdown, and factory warranty information. Reviewing the Auto iPacket allows Tom to know for certain that he is purchasing a safe, properly reconditioned, and well-equipped pre-owned vehicle from a trustworthy and transparent dealer. Purchasing a vehicle without all the proper documentation is risky business. There is more to a pre-owned vehicle than a history report and price. Let us show you. Ask for an Auto iPacket at a reputable dealer near you.